Okay, so here's how today's gonna go. Little different, got my stool. It's gonna be kind of old school Bible story time. And I mean like legit like librarian story time days. Did anybody used to, I don't know if they do this anymore, you go to the library at school and they read like a story to you. Is that still a thing? Okay. So when I was in high school, I had an option. I was a sophomore. I was 15 years old. And they came to us and they said, okay, you have 7 periods throughout the day. One of them is a free period. And so you can pick study hall, or we have 3 different options for you to pick. And I said, well, what is study hall? And the way they explained that to me was, it was a room you went, you sat in there with a bunch of other students, it was quiet, and they made you do homework. Well, I had a strict rule in high school. I didn't do homework. So I passed on study hall. And the option that was given me was to go be a library assistant. And I thought, well, it's quiet in there, but no one's going to make me do homework. And I'm okay with that. So me and my friend Timmy signed up to be library assistants our sophomore year of high school. And when we walked in on day one, we met the 2 librarians. The elementary librarian, her name was Mrs. Kirschberger, we called her Miss K. She was an outstanding person. And then we met the head librarian. Her name was Mrs. Bryant. And Mrs. Bryant had been the librarian at that school since Abraham Lincoln was president. She had been around for some time. And she had about the sense of humor of that horse trough. She did not like our antics. As these 2 football-playing high school boys volunteered to be library assistants, not because we were wanting to sharpen our skills in the Dewey Decimal System, it was because we wanted to get out of study hall. And I can even tell by when I say Dewey Decimal System, most people don't even know what that means, because back in the day, you would go to this library, you would have to look up a book, and they would have these flashcards, essentially, that you would pull out in this drawer, and you'd flip through with all these numbers, and nobody knows why they did this, but it was to go and then correspond it to this and that and blah, 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 and all the stuff that now you just Google, because you used to go to a library and check out these things called books. Look kind of like this. It's words that never end, and they say things to you. And so we joined the library team, and we decided, as any, you know, fun-loving teenage boys who were serving in the library would do, we decided to have some fun with it, because we discovered in our library that there were lots of things to play with. And we didn't know this when we joined up, and there were, I mean, model airplanes and, you know, these life-size frogs of stuff. And one of the things that we housed in our library was a life-size, about 5'3", life-sized-ish statue figure of a knight, like King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table. You understand what I'm saying? And it, like, full armor, full armored 5'3" knight who lived in our library. And Timmy and I got the idea that we thought that Mr. Knight should get to experience more of our school than just the library. So Mr. Knight, during library hour, he would take trips to the cafeteria. He took a trip one day to the principal's office door. The principal was really excited to open his door and Mr. Knight be standing there staring at him. That also volunteered us for this thing they called detention. And one day, I can neither confirm nor deny this, rumor has it Mr. Knight made his way to a bathroom stall in the men's room. I wasn't there. Internet, I wasn't there. But maybe this happened. And I remember we had a lot of fun in the library, but my favorite time, actually, was story time with Miss K. She was the elementary librarian, and we'd be there putting away books and helping clean up, and you'd look, and they'd have this corner section set up, And they'd bring in all the elementary students and they'd put them down for that grade, you know, maybe it's the second graders, and they'd fan them out in this school circle, and Ms. K would walk in and she would sit right down and read them a story. You ever do that? And you would just, and you'd get so, and I remember Timmy and I, we'd be putting books away and it would draw me in, because the way she taught was just so unique, and the way she interacted, and she's just literally reading a story. And so I'm putting, you know, Hardy Boys books away and Babysitter's Club's books away in the shelves, and I'm listening to the story, and then, you know, here's 15-year-old me, and she's reading a story, and I'm like, what happened to Jimmy's dog? She'd look back through the shelves. Shh, Mr. Smith, shh, it's quiet time. All the kids turn around laughing at you. I'd say, don't laugh at me, you'll meet Mr. Knight. And I loved story time. And so today, here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna have story time in our Bibles today, because we're gonna meet a person in John chapter 4. And this story we're actually going to look at for the next 3 weeks in a row. It's commonly known as the story of the woman at the well. And so we're going to read this story, and there's about 26 verses we're gonna have to get through today. And so if you would allow me this moment, whether you wanna pull it out on your phone or scroll there in your Bible, if not, we're gonna have it on the screen, every single verse as I read along. We are gonna have story time today. And there is one simple, tangible takeaway for us today that we're gonna all lace up our shoes with, and it is going to be very, very simple. I pray it'll be so profound that it sticks with us and never leaves us. But if you would, go with me to John chapter 4, and let's have some library-style story time this morning. In verse 1, John 4. Now when Jesus learned that the Pharisees had heard that Jesus was making and baptizing more disciples than John, although Jesus himself did not baptize, but only his disciples, he left Judea. And he departed again for Galilee, and he had to pass through Samaria. Now, when John says he had to pass through Samaria, he doesn't mean geographically that he had to pass through. There were other ways to get from point A to point B. What John's gonna actually do here, because we're gonna meet this woman in just a moment, and we are going to realize that when John says Jesus had to pass through Samaria, he's saying that he had to pass through Samaria to do the work that he was about to do. There was a mission that Jesus was on, and in order for him to accomplish this God-directed, God-given mission, he had to go a certain way. So I'm gonna say something that's not actually a part of our lesson, it's not a part of our story time this morning, but how many of us have maybe been rerouted by God sometimes in life? Has God ever taken you down a path you're like, I did not set out to go down this path. Like, I pulled this up on my maps and I texted God, here's our route. I really like these three stops along the way. Like, back in the day, you used to have to go online to this thing called MapQuest and print out your directions. This is what you do for those without phones. This is what we used to do. And it would be like God sitting in the car with you and you coming in, all right, I got my MapQuest, and him laughing and just ripping it up. Has he ever done that? We like to call those divine detours. When God takes us the long way around, has anyone ever found themselves on a divine detour where God decided he wasn't gonna use the route you selected on that app when you looked up Google Maps, but God decided he was gonna take you the way he wanted to take you? I think oftentimes for the Christian, this is one of the phenomenons that causes us to maybe stumble in our faith a little bit, because we forget that when God takes us on these divine detours, he doesn't do that without purpose. That it is because God indeed has a greater purpose. I believe sometimes God takes us down a path we do not prefer, because he has a greater purpose for us than resides on the path we would choose. And so we are going to learn about this path that Jesus took. And instead of taking the safe way around, God led Jesus straight to the site of ministry that we'll be at in just a moment. He continues, so he came to a town of Samaria called Sychar, near the field that Jacob had given to his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there, so Jesus, wearied as he was from his journey, was sitting beside the well, and it was about the sixth hour. A woman from Samaria came to draw water, and Jesus said to her, "Give me a drink," for his disciples had gone into the city to buy food. The Samaritan woman said to him, "How is it that you, a Jew, ask me for a drink, a woman of Samaria? For Jews have no dealings with Samaritans." And Jesus answered her, "If you knew the gift of God and who it is that is saying to you, 'Give me a drink,' you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water." And the woman said to him, "Sir, you have nothing to draw water with, and the well is deep. Where do you get that living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob? He gave us this well and drank from it himself, and did his sons and his livestock." And Jesus said to her, "Everyone who drinks of this water will be thirsty again. But whoever drinks of the water that I will give him will never be thirsty again. The water that I will give him will become in him a spring of water welling up to eternal life." And the woman said to him, "Sir, give me this water so that I will not be thirsty or have to come here to draw water." And Jesus said to her, "Go call your husband and come here." And the woman answered him, "I have no husband." Jesus said to her, "You are right in saying, 'I have no husband,' for you have had five husbands, and the one you now have is not your husband. What you have said is true." And the woman said to him, "Sir, I perceive that you are a prophet. Our fathers worshipped on this mountain, but you say that in Jerusalem is the place where people ought to worship." And Jesus said to her, "Woman, believe me, the hour is coming when neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem will you worship the Father. You worship what you do not know, and we worship what we do know. For salvation is from the Jews, but the hour is coming and is now here when true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and truth. For the Father is seeking such people to worship him. God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth." And the woman said to him, "I know that Messiah is coming, he who is called Christ. And when he comes, he will tell us all things." And Jesus said to her, "I who speak to you am he." She wakes up that morning and she gets busy. Boyfriend has made his way off to work. Presumably he's not home, and she can't do the normal things that she would be doing in the morning. Things like heading out into town to run errands, heading to the well to gather water. So she gets to work, maybe around the house. She has to figure out how she's going to pass time for a few hours, because she can't go into the normal places where everybody goes. She can't go to the well to get water because she's embarrassed. See, she has become a social pariah. She's judged everywhere she goes. She doesn't want to see people she knows because they know her, they know her story. And she knows that everywhere she goes, people whisper about her. And she knows they're talking about her, or at least she believes they are. And because she walks in that shame everywhere she goes, she thinks people are talking about her and maybe pointing at her, because she doesn't measure up to the societal standards that are placed in her particular part of the world. And so she does what she can do to pass the time, because she knows that as a multiple times divorcee in this culture, that she would be judged. She knows that as she's living with a man who she's not married to, that she'll be looked down upon. And so she does everything she possibly can to avoid interacting with people in public settings. So normal things like going out to the well and drawing water for the day during the morning, she evades, she keeps it at bay, and she waits until the middle of the day, about the sixth hour, right at the heat of the day, close to lunchtime. And she journeys here to this well. If you would, put yourself in the story with me. She makes her way up this hill. It's hot. But she goes because she knows no one will be there, and it will be safe for her to be unseen and unjudged because she's insecure and feeling like she's unloved. And as she makes her time up there, she's expecting to see what she always sees, which is this, the well by itself and no one around. And instead, what happens? She walks up to see a Jewish man sitting there at the well. Hey, I'm thirsty. Can you give me a drink? And she doesn't know what to do. She doesn't know what to do because he's not supposed to speak to her. He's not supposed to speak to her. He's a Jewish man. She's a Samaritan. They don't talk. They don't associate whatsoever. Not just that. He's a Jewish man. She's a Samaritan woman. He would never speak to her. He would never speak to her because they hated each other. Those groups of people hated each other. You think that prejudice and hatred has been around in modern times. It has been around since the beginning of time because people are selfish and we're imperfect and we're messy. And it was no different back then. Because little did she know, the man she was about to have a conversation with would change her life. But she comes into that with her own presuppositions of the moment, with her own fear and her own insecurities. So when this Jewish man asks her for a drink, she doesn't know what to do because her mind starts reeling from this reality that she lives in, which says Jewish people do not talk to Samaritans, because 700 years before the man she's talking to was even born, the Jewish people would be taken captive. They would be conquered by a certain group of people, and they would be taken into a different land. And those who couldn't do as much, those who couldn't offer as much physical value to society, that group of Jewish people were just left to just congregate in the land that they initially had. And so about 100 years later, another group comes on, and they take that group on, and they take them captive. And this group of Jewish people who had been left behind because they were told they were less valuable than other people, this group gets conquered and they start to fold into a new community, a new society, a new group of people who did not worship the one true God. They worshiped pagan idols that they built. And they wanted everything to be done according to human feelings and emotions, that feelings were the ultimate God and happiness was the ultimate pursuit. That may sound like 21st century American Christian culture sometimes. And as a result, this group of once Jewish people started to funnel and fold into this new societal group. And they started marrying people of different faith backgrounds. And as a result, the Jewish people who were residing in this other kingdom, they looked down their nose at this other group. And they said, no. You guys have mixed marriages with people of different cultures and civilizations. And so we are not gonna associate with you anymore. Understand, I don't say any of this to cast a disparaging shadow over Jewish people or Samaritan people. But in order for us to understand the moment that's happening here, when this divorcee meets Jesus, in order for us to understand the gravity of the situation, the weight of the moment, we have to understand how these two groups of people saw each other. See, Samaritans and Jewish people did not associate with each other whatsoever because Jewish people looked at Samaritans as folks who married people of different faith, woven in that societal structure were different opportunities to worship different gods. And so the Jewish people saw Samaritans as people of what they called a mongrel faith. It was an ugly, mutated version of what we believed was pure faith. And as a result, we want nothing to do with you. In fact, some of the Samaritans, about 130 years before Jesus would have this conversation at the well with this woman, some of the Samaritans at the time would build their own temple, and the Jewish people would come in and rip it down because they said, no, you're not worthy of worshiping like we are. And we want nothing to do with you, so we are going to coin a derogatory term for you, and we're going to call it Samaritan. There are ancient historical documents that even point to moments in history between Jews and Samaritans where rabbis, teachers of Jewish tradition and law, would actually encourage midwives being what we would call maybe modern day nurses to help with childbirth. They would come to them and they would tell them, if a Samaritan woman is giving birth, do not help her. We don't want to do anything to help usher in a Samaritan life. The amount of hatred between these two groups cannot be overstated. It was so tense. And so here we have this lady who wakes up, and in order to evade embarrassment and shame and an uncomfortable conversation, she waits till the hottest part of the day to go to the well so she can get her water, because she just wants to be left alone and she doesn't want to be judged. And what she gets instead is a Jewish man sitting there asking her for a cup of water. And not only does he speak to her, but he asks her for a drink. And Jesus, just so you know, so I want to show you, because this is what she's thinking. I want to show you where Jesus could have gone. If you will, go to the map with me. So Judea is where he's coming from. It's right there at the bottom. And Galilee is where he's going to. What's in between those? You can say it. Samaria. Okay, so X's and O's here. A plus B equals C. What's the best route to get to Galilee from Judea? Straight through Samaria. But you know the history now. And so in order to avoid them at all costs, here's what Jewish people would often do. There's a river here in the Jordan Valley called the, you guessed it, Jordan River. And so what Jewish people who were coming from the south going north, what they would do is they would actually pack and they would come and cross this Jordan River. They would go through all the trouble. Crossing the Jordan River is not like hopping over the creek in the south where I'm from. That's not what that is. You had to pack for that. It's like going to the DMV. You're gonna be there a minute. Bring a book. They had to pack, and they would go over and go up the river just to avoid Samaria. You can take that off, and we can go back to where we were. So this woman is looking at this man, and she's thinking, man, why? What are you doing here? And you can imagine she's just thinking, I don't want to have this conversation with this guy. And she's trying to avoid it. And not only can she not avoid a conversation, he asks her to do something with her that requires a physical interaction. You need to understand, Jewish people and Samaritans did not touch each other. And she is dumbfounded. And she says, hey, hold on a minute. You just asked me for a cup of water. You're a Jew, I'm a Samaritan. Why are you asking me for a drink? Because here's what Jesus just did, and it blew her mind. Notice Jesus didn't show up to the well with a Stanley. Jesus showed up empty-handed. He didn't bring a hydro flask. So he looks at this woman and says, that's a great cup. I like those stickers on your Stanley. Can I get some water? She knows he doesn't have a cup. And she realizes in that moment that Jesus, this Jewish man, just asked her to take her cup, the cup she drinks out of. Some of us don't even like to drink after our spouse, because gross. And this Jewish man looks at this Samaritan woman and says, that cup that you drink out of every week, I'm gonna need you to scoop that down. Hand me that cup, I'll drink after you. And she doesn't know how to make heads or tails of this. And she's like, She goes, why are you asking me for a drink? And then he just goes all in and he says, oh, well, you know, you and I will drink this water and then we'll be thirsty again. But if you knew who you were talking to, oh, there's water that you'll never go thirsty again. And she says, sign me up. I would love to not have to lug this thing up and down this hill every time, but you know what else she wanted to do? Notice it says in there, I won't have to draw water. I won't have to come here to draw water. So you're telling me you've got some water for me that will allow me to just stay in the shadows and never have to go in public and risk embarrassment or shame or judgmental eyes, stares, whispers. I can keep my sin to myself. So let me stay right here. You got that kind of water? Give me that kind of water. You got that water machine? You got that cooler? Come set it up in my house. I don't ever want to have to come back here again. And he's like, oh, okay, go get your husband. Bring him back. We'll talk about it. She's like, so I don't have a husband anymore. Well, I did. And then I did before that. And then there was the other time before that. And then there was the time before that, but he was a Dodgers fan, so that didn't work out. And so what does she do? She says, sir, I don't have a husband. And he's like, bingo. And the one you're living with is not your husband. And then she thinks, what happened? How do you know this? And so she says, sir, I perceive you're a prophet. And he says, listen. Here's what's going on here. You're so concerned with the exterior stuff. You're so concerned with these people are supposed to be here worshiping God here. These people are supposed to be here worshiping God here. And I'm telling you, God does not take sides. God takes over. And God's about to reach everyone everywhere so that everyone everywhere, if they believe in Jesus, will be able to worship the Father. And he says, God is seeking after you. And she says, yeah, I've heard the stories. My granddaddy's granddaddy told us that there's going to be a Christ, a Messiah, a rescuer, a redeemer, and he's going to tell us all these things. And Jesus looks at her and says, yeah, he is. He just did. It's me. What a story. This woman was a quintupled divorcee. And Jesus was offering to her the greatest gift ever offered to any human being ever. Salvation. A rescue. That God so loved that he gave. This woman who did everything in her life to avoid being seen in public. This woman who did everything in her life to avoid having to interact with people, especially Jewish people. She didn't even like to go out in public amongst Samaritan people, much less Jewish people. So here is Jewish man, Jesus, who has a conversation with a Samaritan. Add to that a Samaritan woman. Add to that a Samaritan woman who had been divorced. Add to that a Samaritan woman who had been divorced again. Add to that again and again and again, and now is living with boyfriend, unmarried. So Jesus, Jewish man, talking to Samaritan woman at a well where she wanted to be left alone, where he had no business talking to her by way of typical social conventions between Jewish people and Samaritans. And it rocked her world because Jesus highlights for her and all of us what God's love looks like. God's love is not concerned about what you have done, where you have been, what's been done to you. God's love is concerned about you. No one who has ever existed is outside of the reach of God's love. Jesus here crosses every cultural line there was, because he had to get to her. He wanted her to know, you feel unloved. You want to be unseen. You feel judged. You feel insecure. You feel lonely. You feel sad. You feel hopeless. But you're not. You're not, because God sent me to show you just how much you are loved. Jesus crossed every cultural, socioeconomic, religious, racial, every line you could cross. Jesus said, give me a drink. Why? Here it is. Here's a tangible takeaway. It's simple, but sometimes the most profound lessons we learn are the simplest. It said toward the end that the Father is seeking those who will worship him. You ready? Here it is. If you're within earshot of my voice, if you're watching online, here it is. God sought you. I'm gonna give that 3 more seconds because I want you to hear it and I don't want you to ignore it. I don't want it to roll off you like water off a duck's back. I want you to hear this. I want you to hear this because you're going to leave this place and you're going to look out there, and the God who brought the rain, the God who brings the sun, the God who spoke the sun into existence, the God who created that big blue thing we call the ocean 20 minutes that way, the God who hung the moon and the stars that luckily we'll be able to see tonight in sunny San Diego, that very same God who turns the earth that we are on right now, that God sought you because you're the most important thing. Doesn't matter what you've done, what's been done to you, what your past looks like. God knew your... Doggone it, man. I had a conversation with a friend in between services who had just led somebody to Christ right before first service. And he looked at me and he's just like, yeah, you know, there's times I look back and I'm like, I was not fit to lead somebody to Jesus. But on May the 4th, 2025, you just led somebody to Jesus. Can I encourage you, as we celebrate with those who are about to get baptized, the band's gonna make their way up and we'll lead through all that. I want you to hear this, and I want everybody to hear this, and I want you to hear this with all sincerity. This is not for dramatic emphasis. This is not for dynamic purposes. This is Scott Smith who follows Jesus. This is Scott Smith who may or may not have put Mr. Knight in the bathroom stall in high school. This is Scott Smith who at one point was an enemy of God because sin was my pursuit, not Jesus. Can I share this as Jesus follower first? I'm gonna take my pastor hat off for just a moment and share this just as raw as anything. I want everybody to hear this. I don't care who you are, how old you are, what phase of life you are in. I need you to hear this because it's the tangible takeaway I want everybody to take this week. I want you to sit with it this week. I'm not gonna ask you to do anything with this conversation this week. Then sit with it. It's this: God knew your past before it would even be your past. And he gave everything to be everything for your future. That's the Jesus way. That's the rescue. That's why Jesus went to the well, to show this woman and the world God sought after her.